Thank you. Did it go on? Is there a red light? There's a red light. Yes, it went on.
There's no red light.
Okay, so try pressing it.
There is a red.
Okay, then it worked. Thank you. Okay.
You want to move something?
Shall we? No, leave it as is. Good afternoon. First, let me make sure to point out that Joyce has passed around the slips of paper with the code for us to be able to get out of the lot after the class. These are important. I'm going to say to David, who is the one who is recording this, to make sure not to include the following in the recording or we'll get in trouble. But the code to get out of the lot without having to pay is 3291818, followed by the pound sign. If you don't press pound, the lot gate will not open. So please do make sure of that. I will make sure to let David know to get that off the recording. David Osterger in the camera, yes. Okay. Does everyone have sheets? Okay. So we are moving along in the Midrashim about Noach. We began with the word toldot, our first week after the introduction. We then went backward in the pasuk. We went backward in the sentence last week, and we said Ele, these. And now we're going forward in the sentence to Noach, Noach. What does that mean? Well, if you take a look on your sheet, you'll see in source number one, the initial sentence of the Torah portion of Noach says, Ele toldot Noach, Noach. Which, if I were to translate this disingenuously, would read, these are the generations of Noach, Noach, making me wonder if this was like Major, Major, or something along those lines. But it's not. Actually, the full sentence is, as we've seen before, Ele toldot Noach, Noach ish tzadik, tamim haya bedorotav, and it continues, but these are the generations of Noach. Noach was a righteous man. So in and of itself, there's nothing wrong with the phrase, right? These are the generations of Noach. Noach is a righteous man. However, the Medrash is sensitive, as always, to language, and it says there was a shorter way we could have expressed that. What could we have said instead? Yeah. Ele toldot Noach ish tzadik. These are the generations of Noach, a righteous man, or Hu Haya Ish Tzadik, he was a righteous man. Remember that. One of the things that makes studying Chumash very interesting, there are many things on this list, but one of the things that makes studying Chumash very interesting is that Chumash tends to love pronouns. You will find a proliferation of he's and she's and his and hers, so much so that at various points, you read it and say, well, who are we talking about? I've lost track. Usually the default is not to say someone's name. The default is to say him, her, he, she. So that it's odd that the text says, these are the generations of Noach. Noach was a righteous man. Where it could have gotten away with, these are the generations of Noach, a righteous man, or these are the generations of Noach, he was a righteous man. Why did it go out of its way to say the name twice? Now, again, you and I might read that sentence and say, okay, so it did. Bite or go on.
There's no punctuation.
In the Torah itself, meaning open up the scroll, you will not find punctuation. However, the punctuation that we use is the traditional set of notes that we use for reading the text, like we do Shabbat morning when we read from the Torah. And those notes pause after the first Noach. The way you would read it is there's something called a katon on the word Noach, which is a pause note, and then it continues. So it's Ele toldot Noach, Noach ish tzadik. These are the generations of Noach. Noach was a righteous man. There is a comma, essentially, in between. It's more comma-ish. Comma-ish, if you will. Than period-ish.
Is it emphasized that Noah, there was something very special about Noah? The fact that they named
him
twice?
Maybe. In other words, hey, pay attention to his name. Did his name mean something? That could be. That's certainly one possible explanation. Let's offer we're going to see the Medrash's approach, but what else could it be doing by repeating the name Noah? What else could we be seeking to accomplish?
It tells you.
Sorry?
It tells you here.
Oh, well, that's cheating. You can't read that yet. If you read that yet, then we won't have a discussion.
I'll do my homework.
Okay, right? One suggestion that we have on the table that Joyce offers is that it's there to tell us something about the name itself. Pay attention to his name has meaning. Don't simply look at it as someone's name, which, by the way, we've seen on other occasions, this year or other years, that's true throughout Torah. Names are not random. Names carry meaning associated with a person's life. Right? So, some of them are quite well known. Sarah, Sarai, when she has her name changed. But either way, her name comes from a connotation of nobility, aristocracy, a princess, a queen. Avraham, we are told, well, his core name is Avram, a mighty father. Avraham, he is told, Avhamon Goyim, father of many nations. But other names that are more subtle. So, for example, Lot. Lot in Aramaic is a curse. Literally. The word in Hebrew, kalala, in Aramaic is levat, lamed vav tet. And when you look at what plays out in his lifetime and the things that he does and goes through, you understand the association.
He's also covered. Lot is also
right, vatas and balat. Right, that's true. And also there's Lot that is a spice, a sweet-smelling spice. When Yosef is sold, they're transporting the Chotut Sviva Lot. Nonetheless, of the three, I tend to be inclined towards the first. But I could hear the Lot concealment also. Yes?
And on that note, I just want to mention, if anyone's interested, Rabbi Fleck and his wife, Elaine, wrote a book on the meaning of your Hebrew name, and it's available. I have it, and it's fascinating.
So I'm glad for the opportunity to promote that. Rita points out that Rabbi Benjamin Blech has written with his wife Elaine, has written a book on names. I'm happy to plug that, especially because he was my rabbi growing up. He was my shul rabbi. So go ahead and get the book. And he spoke at Beth Shalom how long ago?
Quite recently.
Last year, the year before. Yeah. Okay, so that's our problem that we begin with, is this doubling of the name. And yes, we recognize names have meaning. But the first approach we're going to see in the Medrash is not going to look at the name per se, but rather at the doubling. So let's take a look at what we have here in the text of the Midrash. It begins, again, with the text from the Pasuk, from the verse itself. Eileh toldot Noach, Noach. These are the generations of Noach. Noach, Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana said, Kol mi shenichpal shemo, yesh lo ba'olam hazeh, v'yesh lo ba'olam haba. If a person's name is doubled in the Torah, it means that person has a portion in this world and the next world. Suggesting righteousness, obviously. Right? It's trying to tell us, a name is doubled, that means this person is righteous. Well, we don't leave it at that. Ativun lay. They challenged him. Ativun is a funny word. It's symbolic, or not symbolic, it's representative of the Yerushalmi type of Hebrew that you will see in Bereshit Rabbah. I think I mentioned the first week that Bereshit Rabbah originates primarily with sages from the land of Israel. And their dialect of Aramaic is different from the Babylonian Aramaic found in the Babylonian Talmud. And this is a perfect example where you would find in Babylonian Aramaic the term metve would usually be, or etve. Here is ativun alei, from the same root. In any case, ativun alei. They challenged him with the following. Vaktiv, terach, terach. We have a biblical sentence. I noted it in the English. Bereshit 11:27. I didn't bring it in entirety on the sheets because it's simply a begat sentence. Ve'ele toldo terach, terach holidet Avram, dot, dot, dot. These are the descendants of terach, terach produced, and it lists the children.
So it's the exact same sentence as in Noah's sentence.
Almost.
This is the same connotation.
Of
the double name.
Yeah, so that's what they ask. Im kein yesh lo chelek ba'olam hazeh ul olam haba. So does that mean he has a portion in this world and the next? Why are they so troubled by this idea? What do we know about Terach?
He's not a worshipper.
I have a worshipper, and not a worshipper, but he's an idol merchant. He's a retailer.
Exactly.
That's the
interesting.
But there's right.
That's the rush.
I'm doing that to both questions at once. The first question is, well, you see, the tshuva, so we don't know that yet.
No.
But Shana says, well, that's midrash. That's okay, so is this. We're good with that. It's true that we don't know a whole lot about Terach, except that we do know certain things. We do know, first of all, that Avraham is told, leave the house of your father. That's number one. Number two, we know that Avram and Terach actually both start journeying towards the land of Canaan, and that at some point Terach stops, and Avram keeps on going. He doesn't stay with his father. And there's a lot of discussion in the commentators about him abandoning his father before his father has passed away. Because if you do the math, you find that, in fact, Terach is still alive when Avraham leaves. That's not considered a good thing normally. So those associations tell us a little bit about Terach, and then you're right, the sages expand on this, and we have the account of Avram's run-in with the idols, and so on and so forth. But what we know, and certainly what the Medrash is going to be using as a canvas that leads to this question is, how in the world is Terach listed twice? That's a sign that he has life in the next world, really? So the Medrash continues. Sorry?
Go ahead.
Well, there's another half to the next world also, that's true. But the connotation here is a positive share in the next world. So, Amar Le, to which Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana replied, Afhi lo Tavra. Yeah, that doesn't break it. That's not a problem. Tavra is Aramaic. The analogous word in Hebrew would be Shever. Remember that Shin and Taf are transposed between Hebrew and Aramaic. The Shin of Shever in Hebrew becomes the Taf in Tavra in Aramaic. He says, yeah, that doesn't break the idea. I'm good with that. Terach has a share in this world and the next world. And now the Medrash does something which points to the way that it was canonized. You see here, what they do in the next line is they quote Rabbi Yudin, quoting Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, who was speaking when this Medrash started. So what happened was, we had one lesson from Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana that really ended with the line that we just read, where he said, that doesn't break it. And now, the authority canonizing the Medrash, Rabbi Hoshi, I believe, says, here's another lesson from Rabbi Yudin, quoting Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, where we see this point. So he's sort of breaking the fourth wall. He's turning to the reader and saying, here, I'll show you where we've seen this elsewhere. Damar Rabbi Yudin b'shem Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, ve'ata tavo alavosecha b'shalom. Hashem says to Avraham, you are going to come to your ancestors in peace. It's a promise he makes to him. Bisro sheyesh la'aviv chelek be'olam haba. What does that mean, you will come to your ancestors in peace, says the Medrash? It's more than just a phrase to refer to death. It's the idea that he is going to be happily rejoined with his ancestors because his ancestors, Terach specifically, are making it into the next world. In other words, Terach makes it to the next world. That's the idea. So that's Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana's idea. So yes, Noach's name is repeated, indicating righteousness, and he's making it into the next world. And if you ask me about Terach, I'll say the same thing for him. And not only that, look at the last line. The rest of that sentence in Bereshit Tedvav, right, Genesis chapter 15, says, Tikaver b'seva tova. God says to Abram that he will be buried at a good age. That's a superfluous phrase. What's it doing there? Bisro sheyishmael oseh tshuva. He's informing Abraham that Ishmael is going to repent as well. So Abraham gets the news that Terach and Ishmael will be, Terach will be the one he will meet in the next world, Yishmael will be among those who bury him, and they will all be, so to speak, on his side at that point. What's especially remarkable about this, of course, is that Yishmael hasn't even been born yet. At the time that Avram has this conversation with God, Yishmael doesn't exist. So that's just a side note, but I think it's an interesting side note. He's informing Avram, you're going to have a kid, and the kid's going to be a good kid. And that's good, because it provides wonderful reassurance, right? As Avram goes through life and sees everything to happen with Yishmael, he can remember this pledge made to him that the kid's going to turn out okay. That's a nice thing to have in your back pocket. Shana?
It also provides some additional support for Avraham's reluctance to turf Yishmael when Sarah says, get him out of the house.
Right. I was going to get there, but you beat me to it. You are 100% right. I think that it definitely gives another layer to what's going on in that whole story. You know, Abraham is thinking to himself, you know, it doesn't have to be this way. And in fact, he's going to be good. Just let me keep him. Maybe, I mean, I'll come back to it. I don't want to jump it too far ahead yet. So that's our Medrash. So we could read this and say, okay, it's a nice idea. Noach's name is doubled, and that indicates that he's righteous. But there are some questions that we ought to ask here. What should bother us here? I'm thinking storyline, not text. In the basic, just message that the Medrash is giving, I have a couple of problems. One problem that I have is that the Medrash doesn't need to tell me that Noach is making it into the next world. I'm sorry. The next words in the Torah say it. Ish tzaddik. He is a righteous man. Tamim haya b'dorotav. Complete in his generations. Oh, and by the way, God's going to destroy the world and save him. I need you to give me the word Noach twice in order to hint to me that he has a share in the next world? That's perplexing. I thought that I knew that already about him. We had a whole discussion last week about Noach finding favor in God's eyes. And wasn't that an indication of his righteousness? And we said no, because historically in pagan times, and we pointed to the Iliad as one example of it, you know, the gods found favor with people not just because they were righteous, but because they worshipped well or whatever the gods chose to like. And what we're saying is Noah finds favor in God's eyes not through one of these other ways, but rather because he is Ish Tzaddik, because he is righteous. And that was one message. But I know it now. I don't need you to tell me he's making it into the next world. So that's one question I have. Another question is, do we really need to drag in Terach and Yishmael into this Medrash? Rabbi Oshia, when he canonizes Bereshit Rabbah, does he really need to throw Terach and Yishmael into this story? It's not as though this is the only place this can appear. In fact, this same idea will appear when the verse comes up later on in the book of Bereshit and will tell us that Terach makes it into Olam Haba. It will appear again regarding Yishmael to tell us Yishmael makes it into Olam Haba. So it's not as though he needed to throw it in here because he had no other opportunity to say so. Yes?
So is there any coincidence that each time the name is mentioned double, that it precedes it by the fact that they are being told that there are generations to follow them?
What do you think? I hear you. Joyce points out that the times when we see Ishmael's name twice, it does connect to when we see Ishmael's name twice, when we see Terach's name twice, when we see Noach's name twice, it is connected to future generations where, you know, we're told these are the generations of Noach, these are the generations of Terach, and with Ishmael also, these are the generations of Ishmael. It's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about it at all. I mean, other than it fits into what we said 2 weeks ago, you know, about the righteous person being the one who was working to produce the future generations. I suppose in that sense you see it. Maybe. Shaina.
But there are times when it deviates. I'm trying to think, is it Ela Tolbot Yaakov Yosef?
Yes.
Yes. Right. So you have Ela Tolbot Yaakov, and based on previous text or expectation, the next word will be Yaakov Oli, Yaakov, Jacob, and Jack. But instead it's Ela Tolbot Yaakov, these are the generations of Yaakov Yosef.
Right.
So that supports the idea that this is a significant pattern because sometimes there's deviation from it.
Right. Although, we should realize that when you get to that point, they actually ask, well, why doesn't that fit the pattern? As well as, why Yosef when there are a whole bunch of other kids from Yaakov? Why is Yosef the product? And the Midrashim and the sages of comment say what they say there. But it's true. This is a limited pattern, and therefore we should ask, why here? That's true. Terach and Yishmael are after, yeah. So those are a couple of questions. Then I have another problem. Take a look at source number 2, please. This is another Medrash from the same collection of Midrashim, Bereshit Rabbah, commenting later in the book of Bereshit on a doubling of a name. This is something we saw for those who were, actually, I don't know if anyone here was at, I gave a series at the Bayit about a year and a half ago, where we looked at Midrashim on the Akedah, the binding of Yitzhak, of Isaac. And one of the Midrashim there noted that when God calls to Abraham and tells him not to sacrifice Yitzchak, so he says, Abraham, Abraham. Right? He calls out, Abraham, Abraham. So look at this Midrash there, source number two. For those who read the YU to go that's distributed in shuls before Yom Tov, so I wrote this up in an article that appeared in the Rosh Hashanah one a couple of months ago, so you may have seen this there. Tani Rabbi Chia, Lashon Chiba, Lashon Zeruz. Rabbi Chia says, the doubling of the name, when God calls out to Abraham, he says, Abraham, Abraham, it was an expression of Chiba, affection. It was an expression of Zeruz, of urgency. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov taught, after Rabbi Chia said, it shows love, like he says the name twice, or it shows urgency, Abraham, Abraham, you know, this is urgent, don't put this off until after you've read your email, this is one to take care of now. Then we get another idea, Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, Amar lo uladarot, that God spoke to him, and with the second mention of his name, to subsequent generations, saying, Ein dor she'ein bo ke'Avraham. There is no generation which lacks an Abraham. And now it refers to other times where someone's name appears twice in a divine summons. Ein dor she'ein bo ke'Yaakov. There is no generation without someone like Yaakov. Ein dor she'ein bo ke'Moshe. There is no generation that lacks a Moshe. Ein dor she'ein bo ke'Shmuel. And there is no generation that lacks a Shmuel. Now, without going into all of the different messages that are here in this Midrash, and believe me, we could spend the entire time on just that Midrash, and if you go on YU Torah and you Google the phrase Living Midrash, you will not only find the classes from now, but I think you'll find the classes that I gave on the Akedah, so you can find what we said about it back then. It's all archived for all time, or until the demise of this form of storage of data anyway. But the point is, here I have a Midrash that sees doubled names and doesn't say it's because Avraham, Yaakov, Moshe, Shmuel make it into the next world, but instead offers me very different explanations. It's an expression of affection, it's an expression of urgency, it's a message for all generations. Hey, those are pretty poetic. Why didn't we take those? One of those explanations. Instead of taking the explanation that we gave, which actually is an entirely different message. It's even directed differently. Right? If I take the version that's in source number two, to whom is it directed? Who's supposed to understand something from mentioning the name twice? Who's the recipient of the message? The person who's being addressed. Right? Yaakov, Moshe, whoever it is, Avraham. In our version, in source number one, who is the intended recipient of the message? Sorry? Us, the reader of the Torah. Yeah?
In the second case, it's only a quotation. It's so much talking to someone, and the other one's a narrative.
Mm. Right.
That's what you're, I guess, saying. But...
Right. I think that's what the Midrash may be picking up on. The fact that the psukim, the passages, which I didn't bring you on the sheet, so in all fairness, that's kind of, you know, I really ought to have brought them on the sheet. But in source number two, they're talking about God speaking to someone and using the person's name twice. There's a message that that person is meant to hear. Whereas, in source number one, the word, the name is not told to the person. God isn't speaking to Noah and saying, these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man. God's speaking to the reader. And telling us. And therefore the message has to be one that's to us. So maybe that's what's going on, as Alina suggested. I want to see if we can get, though, a stronger understanding here of this Midrash and answer our questions along the way. The questions that we've posed so far are, why are we dragging in Terach and Yishmael? Why do I need this doubling to tell me that Noach is righteous? And why don't I use the ideas in source number two about doubled names, as well as Joyce's point, which I don't have an answer for, about the associations in these three cases, that it's all about future generations. So I think that it's true, as Alina pointed out, there are two different kinds of name doublings. there is the calling of a name twice, and then there is use of a name instead of a pronoun. And the explanation that it's affection or that it's telling the person something about future generations, that all makes sense when you're addressing someone. Here, we need a different explanation. Now, I should note that that idea falls apart when you reach the Medrash Tanchuma. The Medrash Tanchuma actually lumps together the cases that are in source number 2, where God speaks to Moshe, to Avraham, to Yaakov, and he says their name twice, with our case of Noach. It includes them all together. However, you could suggest that that's a Medrash Tanchuma idea. Medrash Tanchuma is canonized much later than Medrash Rabbah. It's something that appears only, I think you're talking about, possibly as many as 500 years after Medrash Rabbah has already been collected, maybe 300 years, depending on greater scholarship than I have. But the point is that it's entirely possible that Medrash Tanchuma is trying to amalgamate Midrashim about the double names for readers in order to put it all together for someone who's not going to be familiar with Bereishit Rabbah, even at the expense of doing some violence to the original Midrashim, by grouping together those that are about one kind of double name and those that are about another kind of double name. That's a side note. But the key thing to me that emerges from seeing the different kinds of name doublings is that this is meant to be a message to me. This is meant to be a message for us. This is not God speaking to Noah and saying, Noah, you make it into the next world. This is God speaking to the reader and saying, I want you to know that Noah makes it into the next world. Which leads to the question of, why do I need to know that? Aside from what I said earlier, that I think it should be obvious to us that Noah makes it into the next world. He is world class, literally, in his righteousness. But why is it my business? Right? Why is it any of my business whether he makes it into the next world or not? You know, the Gemara tells the classic story of the king Menashe and how one of the sages is teaching a lesson about King Menashe, and he speaks of him disrespectfully in talking about the fact that the Talmud mentions that Menashe, this king, does not make it into Olam Haba, doesn't make it into the next world. And he is rebuked, the sage is rebuked, in a dream by Menashe himself, who comes to him and gives him a lesson in knowing his place. And without going into the whole story, because it would just distract from what we're doing now, one of the points that emerges there is, it's not your business whether he's making it into the next world or not, and that shouldn't lead to you being less than respectful in the way that you speak of him. We find it also with Shlomo. The Gemara tells us, the Talmud tells us an account, in that the sages were trying to figure out who makes it into the next world and who doesn't, and they actually want to conclude, based on certain events in his life, that King Solomon doesn't make it into the next world. And there's a whole story there where King David appears to them. And the message again from it is, you don't get a vote. So, if we're not supposed to really be involved in the conversation of who makes it into the next world, why does God want to tell me this? What kind of a message am I supposed to get? Yes?
Maybe we're being told what the outcome of being a tzaddik is. So it's a lesson. If you want to be a tzaddik, this is what will happen to you. You'll get into the next world. Now go figure out how to be a tzaddik.
Right. So the suggestion then is that the Torah is trying to tell me that this is what happens if you do what Noach did, if you live this type of a lifestyle, or maybe not. Maybe it's just, this is, you know, learn to be a tzaddik as we're describing Noach, because Noach makes it into the next world, and that's the fate of a tzaddik. Okay.
Follow his
example, maybe. I think that there's a lot to say for that, especially because that's what the book of Bereishit, at least in part, is for. That's what the book of Bereishit, according to some, is meant to tell me. When I put this together, I was trying to remember a source, and I couldn't remember it, and it just clicked. That happens more often than I like. It's the Ramban in the beginning of Bereishit. It's a classic to be aware of when you learn Medrash, because I really ought to have brought it, but I didn't remember. But hear it now. There's a classic Rashi that starts the Torah. And maybe because it starts the Torah, therefore it's classic. But it's also a classic in its own right. In which Rashi asks a question, which Rabbi Yitzchak in the Medrash actually in Bereshit Rabbah asks, why did the Torah start with Bereshit? Why didn't it start with the Jews as a nation receiving the laws of Rosh Chodesh, the first set of laws that we receive as a nation, HaChodesh HaZelachem, and so on? Why start with Bereshit? And Rashi quotes Rabbi Yitzchak's answer in the Medrash, in which he quotes the pasuk, the passage in Tanakh that says, Koach ma'asav higid le'amo latet lehem nachalat goyim. God conveyed to his nation the might of his deeds, the strength of his deeds, in order to give them the portions of the nations. Which Rashi says means, God wants us to know that he created the world in order that we should be able to defend the granting of the land of Israel to us. Lest the nations come and say, hey, you're thieves. Don't worry, our answer is to point to the Chumash and say, we're not thieves. God made the world, and he gave this land to us. That's worked very well, I should say, as a defense. But that's the idea, as Rashi reads the Medrash. But you have to be very careful when you read anybody quoting the Medrash, because you have to see where the quotation marks end. The quotation marks don't end all the way at the end, after the line, in order that we should be able to tell the nations that God created the world and gave it to whoever he chose, and therefore God gave us the land. It actually ends after quoting that biblical verse that God informed us of his might, you know, in order to give us the portion of the nations, right? That part is there to say that, and I'm not remembering this word for word, but to say that God created it and God gave it to whomsoever he chose. That's the wording of the Medrash. And so Ramban quotes the same Medrash at the beginning of the Torah and does something entirely different which relates to what we're talking about. Ramban says that it's informing us that God created the world and of all of the events in the book of Bereshit in order to teach us what God rewards and what God punishes. To calibrate effectively our system of values. So I'm going to read about people of Sodom getting punished. I'm going to read about Abraham and Sarah getting rewarded. And I'm going to learn, oh, this is it. You know, it's like when they teach a computer, when you write software for OCR software, optical character recognition. We have software that's supposed to recognize a text and be able to process it and then turn it into the individual words, or voice recognition software. So first you write the program, but then you have to go through a very important calibration phase in which the software has to learn to recognize speech patterns or learn to recognize text and break it down. The human being has this remarkable software in the sense that we are able to make decisions and evaluate situations. But you need the book of Bereshit, says Ramban, in order to understand what God rewards and what God punishes, what God accepts and what God rejects. Ramban is taking it from the same Medrash that Rashi does, but he's taking it in an entirely different direction. But my point is, going back to this idea, that this is what the book of Bereshit is for. It's to teach me who makes it into the next world. It's to teach me what God approves of. The Netziv, Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, talks about this in the name of this first book in the Torah, is Sefer HaYashar, the book of integrity, the book of straightness, of righteousness. They're supposed to teach me how to be Yashar. And it teaches me negatives. It teaches me the behavior of Noah's son, Canaan, or grandson, I should say, Canaan, and so on. And so here, by emphasizing that Noah enters the next world, maybe it's teaching me that Noah is meant to be a role model for us. Rita.
Also, Terah can be a role model, too.
Oh, we're getting to Terah. You're right, but let me hold off on Terah for a moment. Because first I want to deal with another of our questions. Don't I already know that Noah is great by reading the fact that God saved him from the flood? Isn't that my indication that this is behavior God rewards? Shana?
Well, that's the acme, but then there's a decline.
Excellent.
He has a bad time after that.
Excellent. There's the downside, too. Because after the flood, we get the planting of the vineyard, which we talked about last week, and is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? But however you read the planting of the vineyard, there's the drunkenness afterwards, and yes, I don't plan on going through the rest of the story. But there's a decline. And I might look at that and say, well, I guess at the end of the day, he's Ish Ha'adama, man of the earth, rather than Ish Tzadik, the righteous one. And maybe he's not so worthy. And maybe he doesn't make it into the next world. Maybe he hit his height, and then he dropped. And so maybe what the Medrash is doing for me is not only teaching me the sort of behavior that God rewards, but he's telling me not to judge someone by a single event. Yes, Rita?
It shows that God is forgiving.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, that God isn't going to judge the person by a single event. We look at a lifetime. This is particularly important when we look at the Torah and we look at people's lives within the Torah. Because you get somebody who lives anywhere, 120, 130, 175, and you look at a single event or three or four events from their lifetime, and it's so tempting to try to extrapolate personality out of that. Oh, this person was quiet because he didn't speak up in this particular occasion. Right? Or this person is, you know, kind of a thief because they tricked someone in this situation. Like, you know, imagine someone did that to you out of one event in your life. You know, I mean, unfortunately, we only have the evidence the Torah gives us. So if the Torah only gives us one story, three stories, four stories, we're meant to learn something from them. But we do have to be careful not to overextend our evidence and not to be too cavalier about the way we do this.
Especially because they lived such long lives.
Yeah, I mean, something else must have happened at some point. Exactly. So that, to me, is what we're doing here. We get this doubled name, which is addressed to us, the reader, in order to teach us that Noach makes it into the next world, regardless of what's going to happen later on, after he's already been saved from the flood. He's making it into the next world. And now, I'm ready to go back to our question about Terach and Yishmael and what they're doing in this Medrash. Right? I think I've telegraphed it. Right? Mm-hmm. You're talking about Terach, whom we indict as an idol worshiper, idol salesman. Yishmael, who's kicked out of the house for his brutality or his sins, whatever he's involved with, is subject to its own Midrashim. But clearly, he's not on the good team at that point. And they, too, make it into the next world, despite evidence from their lives that would surely have prejudiced the reader otherwise. They fit a set. That, I think, is what this Medrash is doing. But here's one more keynote, and this, to me, is maybe, in a sense, more important than everything we've said in the last 37 minutes. Pick up a Chumash. Open up Parshat Noach. And you begin with a sentence that says, these are the generations of Noach. Noach is a righteous man, and so on. Let's pretend that any of us sitting down with a Chumash would have caught the fact that Noach's name is used twice. Speaking for myself, I would not have caught that. I would have read right on and said, "Okay, yeah, these are generations of Noach. Noach is a righteous man." It would not. I'm not sensitive enough when reading to catch that. Even had I caught that, I would not in a billion years have come up with this explanation. So what kind of message to the reader is it if the reader can't figure this out? Am I alone in this regard?
That happens so often in the
Yeah, it does. It's all over the place. And not just in Medrash Haggadah, when you get Midrashim that amplify stories or teach, you know, particularly moral lessons. In Medrash Halacha also, in Halachic Medrash, there's an extra vav. Oh, well, that vav is meant to teach me this law. All over the place it happens. Sometimes the Torah will say, Ish, man, or B'nai Yisrael, literally translated the sons of Israel, and the Medrash will say to me, yeah, that only applies to the men. And then other times, it applies to men and women. How am I reading this supposed to know? The answer to me is that this underscores the requirement of Torah She'Be'al Peh, of having a spoken Torah. You're right. Sitting down and reading the Torah portion without the Medrash, I won't know this. But that's not the way Torah was taught. It's certainly not the way it's taught today, but it's not the way Torah was taught ever. You can't teach Torah saying, well, I'm just going to focus on this layer and get the text without any of these traditions. You're missing a whole lot then. This is part of the experience of learning, is indeed to have this. No one should feel bad that they wouldn't have extrapolated Noach making it into the next world out of a doubled name Noach. You weren't meant to. It was meant to be passed down by tradition and learned as part of the study of Torah. Yes?
How about like a Herzl's Chumash where you have lots of...
Right. I love the Herzl's Chumash.
It's best
the, I'm not going to go best.
Well, I like
hard.
Jonathan Sacks too, but really, you do get some information.
The, it's
like
true.
This.
No, it's certainly true. The Hertz / Sansino edition, right, where they're going to give you, you know, the little, you have to look up the key in the beginning to know that R is Rashi and N is Nachmanides and so on. But he tries to give you a digest, and there are, thank God, good editions of Chumash that are available, but they try to give you additional commentary to try to help us learn from it. Absolutely. Rita.
I know in studying English literature, when something is repeated, it means I pay attention to this. So we are told by the repetition, pay attention to this. This is an important name. This is an important person without having
right.
an explanation.
Right. As long as we have a sensitive enough ear. Mm-hmm. Having studied, you know, literature, I think gives you a leg up.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it does teach you sensitivity. I mean, you know, my memories of studying it are dim. But I did.
No, but that's something I really remember.
Yeah, no, it's certainly true. I remember vividly the professor talking about what death means in a sonnet and, you know, pick up on that, or what a candle burning down meant and so on. Like, yeah, you have to have that kind of an ear, and you have to train yourself to it. But let's go a little further with this medrash, because there's more, a lot more, that we need to say. We're not going to finish it all this week, I think, but we'll try. The Terach and Yishmael, Terach and Avraham, it's interesting that, as our Medrash put it, Avraham does not know about his father Terach's repentance. Right? Look again at the Medrash. Ve'ata tavo al avotecha b'shalom. Right? You will come to your ancestors in peace, God says to Avraham. Bisro, he informed Avraham, Sheesh la'aviv chelek be'olam hava, that his father has a portion in the next world. It sounds like Avraham is unaware. Right? Now, I could have floated the idea that Avraham actually isn't aware because there is no repentance. I could have floated the idea that Terach makes it into the next world on Avraham's coattails. We have a passage in the Talmud which says, Bra mezake abba, that children can provide merit for their parents. Because ultimately, parents generate, and I don't think this is exclusively parents and children, that happens to be a relationship where it's very clear. But the idea is that if you trigger someone else's good deeds, if you enable someone else to do something righteous, then it is your merit also. So, if the child turns out to be good, the parents got to get some credit. So maybe Terach gets in because, after all, look who his kid is. Yes?
Do you have a whole idea behind saying Kaddish?
As a piece of the idea, yeah. I don't know if I would be able to say it's the whole idea. But yes, the child filling the place of the parent in the community and declaring the greatness of God. Yes, I would agree with that. But take a look at source number 3, where we find out that it's not so in this case. At least in the Medrash Tanchuma's version of things, we get an extra detail. V'lomeis Avraham Avinu ad shenisbaser mima'asei Terach Aviv she'asa tshuva. Our father Avraham did not die before he was informed of his father Terach's actions that he had repented. So it is actually that Terach has repented, but Avraham needs to be informed of that. I found that interesting. A second piece here. Yishmael. And this goes back to the point that Shana made in the beginning. Avraham does not want to evict Yishmael. Avraham believes that he can train Yishmael to do mitzvot. If you remember the story when the three strangers come to visit, right? Angels, but does Avram know they're angels or not? It seems like Avram is not aware that they're angels. He thinks that they are random strangers. And Abraham wants to have an animal slaughtered to be able to provide food for the strangers. Do you remember what he does with the animal?
It
said, Vayitain el Hanar. He gave the animal to the youth. Says Rashi, I believe quoting a Medrash, that he gave him to Yishmael lechancho b'mitzvot, to train him in mitzvot. Abraham says, I have hope for this kid. I want this kid to grow up to be good. Abraham thinks that he can do this, and maybe, as Shayna suggested, maybe it's because he had this message from beforehand that Yishmael is going to be okay. He had this message that Yishmael was going to turn out all right. We have sources in the Torah that speak of Yishmael's repentance. I brought this more as an aside than anything else. But I gave it to you on the sheet. Sources 4, 5, and 6 tell us how we know that Yishmael repented. I'm going to go through it quickly, not taking much time on it, because it's not our focus. But the first is when he cries out. Remember that when he's been evicted from the house, right? So Yishmael is at that point a teenager. He's dying of thirst with his mother Hagar. He cries out. And God says, I'm going to show them water. And the angels turn to God and say, what are you doing? Do you know what his kids are going to do to your kids? So to speak. And obviously, in the time of the Talmud, when they recorded this, they didn't know the half of it. And God's response is, who is he right now? And the response that the angels have to say is, he's righteous. Yeah. This is all based on the biblical verse where God says, where the pasuk, the Torah says that God has heard the voice of the child as he is there. God judges a person based on who he is at that moment, and right now he is righteous. Which is remarkable when you consider that he's just been kicked out of the house by Sarah for being wicked. Calls out to God, now we call him righteous. That's one. Number two, I'm going through this a little bit quickly just because it's not our main focus.
Sarah said he was wicked.
That's, she has a pretty good judgment as far as I'm concerned. And not to mention, God agreed with her. Right? God told Abraham, go along with it.
Shalom Abai.
Maybe. Maybe if God is smart enough to worry about Shalom Bayit, we should also learn from that one too. But the second source for it is the regarding the Akedah, the binding of Yitzchak, in which we are told that Avram travels with two youths, right? Shnei Na'arav Imo, two youths. So he brings these two youths with him. Who are the youths? Says the Medrash, Yishmael and Eliezer. This story occurred after Yishmael was kicked out of the house. The Akedah is a chapter later in Chumash. It is as many as 33 years later. Could be less, can't be more. But it's as many as 33 years later, and Yishmael is back in the household, indicating that sometime after he got kicked out, he came home. As this Medrash understands it, there's a reunion at some point. And then the final source, in source number 6, we see that at the burial of Abraham, the Torah says, Yitzchak and Yishmael, his sons, buried him, which is odd. I would have expected age order. It should be Yishmael and Yitzchak. And the Talmud says, you're right, but this is an indication that Yishmael honored Yitzchak. He gave him the first position. He said, you go first. Showing that, again, he has repented. So we have this idea of Yishmael's repentance. It's a longer discussion, but I just wanted to at least have you see these few sources about it. But we have to see source number 7. And source number 7 takes us back to Joyce's point from the beginning. Again, we saw a Medrash that said that Noach's name is doubled rather than use a pronoun in order to teach us, the reader, that the doubled name indicates that Noah is making it into the next world. Lest I think that at the end of his life he gets corrupted and he's no longer worthy. No, Noah is worthy. And Terach and Yishmael, too, their names are doubled to teach that they also make it into the next world. You can't judge a person by a particular incident or a particular phase in their lives. That's our message so far. Well, take a look at source number 7, which says, forget everything you just heard. This is the next medrash in Bereishit Rabbah, and it starts the same way. Ela told out Noach, Noach. These are the generations of Noach, Noach. Asmeha, the medrash says. I don't understand. This is perplexing. Lo avetzarech krala meimar, ela Ela told out Noach, shame. All it had to say was, these are the generations of Noach, and then start on his kids. Shame cham yevet. Which is a question, really, it's a double question. Why did you bother to go into not being righteous, which we've already talked about, and we're going to end up talking about more. But also, again, why is Noah's name there twice? And this Medrash gives us an entirely different answer. The Medrash says, Ella, but rather, Niyacha. Niyacha is an Aramaic term, analogous to Noah, in fact, in Hebrew. Niyacha lo, Niyacha laolam, relief, rest, for him, and for the world. Niyacha l'avos, niyacha l'banim. Relief for ancestors, relief for descendants. Niyacha l'elyonim, niyacha l'tachtonim. Rest for the, relief for the upper realms, relief for the lower realms. What are those? We'll have to see. And finally, niyacha b'olam hazeh, niyacha l'olam haba. Relief for this world, relief for the next world. What did this, what just happened? Why did we dump what we said before? We just dropped everything that we had said for the first 40 minutes. And by the way, how does Noah accomplish all of these wonderful things for this world, for the next world? What is this about? So, what it's doing here is, as Joyce said in the beginning, picking up not on the repetition, but on the name itself. It's trying to call our attention to the name Noah. It's repeated in order to tell me these are the generations of Noach who provided Noach, who provided relief, who provided a break, rest. Where did they get that from? Source number 8. The naming of Noach. We saw this verse already last week, the week before. Vayikra et Shemo Noach. He, Noach's father Lemech, named him Noach, saying, this will comfort us from our deeds and the strain of our hands, from the land that God has cursed. Okay? He names him Noah, saying this one is going to provide us with comfort. That is a hope of a parent for the child. This is the one who should bring us comfort. So what is this comfort? Well, the first level, for rest, for relief for himself and for the world, because the world survives, right? It's prophetic. Second, relief for his ancestors and for his descendants. So on a simple level, I could say, because now they have a posterity, those ancestors, right? Now there's going to be a future, and now there will be descendants. However, take a look at source number 9. A medrash also found in Bereishit Rabbah. B'sha shabara kadosh baruch hu et adam harishon hishlita al hakol. When God created Adam the first, he gave him power over everything. Hapara haita nishma l'choresh. The cow listened to the plowman. V'atelem nishma l'choresh. And the furrow listened to the plowman, meaning you plowed and things worked. But when Adam sinned, they rebelled. They said, you're not worthy anymore of controlling the world. Remember, God curses and says that you, with the sweat of your brow, you'll bring forth from the ground. You're going to plant one thing, other things are going to grow. And it's a terrible time. And further, the Medrash says, until Noah arose, the water would rise and flood their graves. People had no rest in the land. The land rejected the people. And Noah comes on the scene, and now there is Noah, there is rest, there is relief from these problems. So that's another midrashic take on the rest that he provides for the ancestors and for the descendants. And then rest for the upper realms, that's God, who is satisfied by having now creations who follow the Torah. Rest for the lower realms, that's us, the creatures who are saved in Noah's merit. And for this world and for the next world, that's the merit of Noah. That he has this world and he also has the next. So I've given this last midrash a little bit of a short shrift because in the interest of getting it in, but I hope that it's been clear. What we've learned from this are, number one, to watch for this sort of anomaly, to be sensitive to the language. Number two, not to judge a person by a single moment in his life. God is sending us a message here by repeating his name, indicating to us this person has special merit, this person will be in this world, this person will be in the next world. And also, Noach, Noach, this tzaddik, this righteous person, provides Noach, provides relief for the world. That's the impact that he made on the world, which I think is a lesson for us also. It's sort of a charge to us to be like this and to provide this kind of relief for the world as well. That we should not only live for ourselves, but try to provide this on behalf of others. There is, as always, much more we could say with this. I'm going to pause with that, and we'll pick up, God willing, next week. Again, as always, please be in touch by email. One other note.